Well, hello there. I was just wondering if you'd like some chat about tech. But don't worry, it won't be too over the top and informative. It would be largely nonsense. You would like that? Great. Okay, cool. Well, the Noise Cancelling Podcast is here. That's exactly what we're going to be doing. So thanks. Really hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone. That was me leading us into the Noise Cancelling Podcast.
That's great.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I wanted to sing again, but I realised that I can't really sing, and I keep doing it on each episode, and it's starting to get a bit thin.
But I like it.
Yeah, I know you do, but you're very pro Gareth, and I don't think the listeners are. But thank you, listeners, for coming along. One of them is, as ever, my dad. Dad, I'm just going to give you a warning now. This one's going to be a little bit heavy on the old computers, so if you want to keep listening, please do. It's nice to be able to talk to you and tell you about things that I'm doing. Last week, he did phone me and say and mention that he knew I'd spoken to my mum because he'd heard it on the podcast as a part of the phones test, which frightened me to my very soul before I realised how he'd managed to do that. So good to know that everyone's understanding that. But yeah, Dad, it's just to let you know, we're going to have quite a lot of computer chat. And the reason for that is on the podcast today, we have
Cherie L. Smith, editor-in-chief of Laptop Mag.
And Matthew Hansen, senior computing editor of Tech Radar. And if I help your dad with his computing problems at any time, it won't be the first member of Gareth's team, family even, that I would have done that with. So,
Help my sister very well. She thought you were brilliant as well. So well done, Matt. We would have also had Bill Thomas, but they unfortunately managed to have a clash that came up at the very last minute. So sadly, you won't be hearing Bill's spicy takes. Which I'm quite gutted about, to be honest, because I was looking forward to that extra bit of spice, a little bit of hot sauce into the computing chat. But it's going to be us three fine people instead. So welcome to the Noise Cancelling Podcast. And as ever, we're going to be starting. Oh, yeah, by the way, if you don't know, I am Gareth Beavis. As if you don't know, as if like I'm such a really important person. Sorry. I'm Gareth Beavis, Global Editor-in-Chief of Tech Radar. I feel really bad for being so egotistical there, but come on, it's true. Right, the big question is that Honor, if you haven't heard this, Honor is a sub-brand of Huawei, and it's being sold off, apparently due to the fact that it's been very difficult to use all the parts of Android that it would like. So apparently that is being sold off to make sure that things can continue like that. So the big question we've got is, which part of a popular company would you like to see owned by another brand? One of the production meeting, the kind of questions that came up were, well, what if someone else owned Kindle from Amazon? And that's the kind of thing we're looking for, just to really preface this question. So, Matt, I'm coming to you first.
I haven't thought about this too much, but I Great. Would quite. I would. I would just then I thought, do you know what? I would really like someone other than Google to take on Google Music, because I use that a lot, and I know that Google is shutting, isn't it, Google Music, like it does with every, you know, mildly successful or unsuccessful service it has. It's changing it all to YouTube Music, but it's losing a few essential features. So I would like someone else to take Google Music and nurture it and let it continue to live, and so I can still use it on my smartwatch.
Why do you love Google Music so much? Just because of the smartwatch?
Yeah, well, the fact that you can upload your own music to Google Music, and then you can, on Android Wear, you can actually access those playlists. I believe with YouTube Music, you can't do that. And so I can't make a localized playlist on my Google smartwatch, thanks to Google shutting down Google Music. So if Google could be taken out of anything related to Google, that would be perfect for me, I think.
I remember that coming out, but is Google Music's upload facility, is that free?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, because I mean, Apple still having, I don't know why I'm banging the Apple drum straight away, but Apple does have iTunes Match, which if you subscribe to Apple Music, you can use and it can do the same thing.
But could I don't think I could use it on my Android Wear phone.
Well, that's true. You'd have to buy a different watch completely, but that kind of negates the point.
The one small print, the one company I do not want to take over Google Music is Apple, because that would actually make things harder for me.
True. But then I feel like if someone else buys Google Music, then it becomes just another music service. So basically what you really want is someone else to come and give you an option on your smartwatch, really.
Or
this could happen still, Matt.
Yeah, or if Spotify kind of did it, you know, allowed me to have a offline playlist on my smartwatch, that would be great. But
I mean, that's coming to a lot of devices. It's on Garmin, which is absolutely phenomenal. You know, as a brand I thought it would go towards the front of, Garmin was not up there, but it is, and it is brilliant. And I've got, you know, I use the Apple Watch for some running as well. And, you know, you can use your Apple Music playlist quite easily offline as well there, but the two are just equally as good. So it's really cool. Yeah, just get a Garmin, Matt. There you are. I solved it for you. Cherie. Yeah,
thanks.
It's funny that Google was the entryway to this conversation, because I would like to return something to Google, and that something would be Motorola. Like, I totally loved when Motorola was under Google. We had better phones, we had better smartwatches, the whole nine. And then it went to, and when it went to Lenovo, that kind of, that innovation kind of went away, because I was all about those modular phones and being able to design your phone. And it just all went to the wayside when Lenovo took it over. It just, like, I'm a fan of Lenovo when it comes to laptops. When it comes to phones, not so much.
Why is that?
They just, like, a Motorola event used to be a thing. And it just hasn't been a thing in so long that I feel like it would be better served going back to Google. And maybe and Pixel kind of needs a lift right now anyway. So maybe they can fit, like, maybe they can get some of that old magic back that they used to have.
And Google did really essentially buy HTC. You know, it bought all the good bits that it needed to make better smartphones and just yoinked those out of there. So, I mean, in many ways that happened.
Yeah, but I feel like with when Motorola, like, because when, like, Google was a lot more willing to play with things when they had Motorola. It's like, hey, yeah, why don't we let people design their own phones? Hey, let's talk about this modular phone idea. Let's do this. And then everything went to pot, and all of a sudden it was with Lenovo, and things weren't the same. And I want to go back. I want to take that back to where we used to be.
You love nostalgia, Cherie. That's the problem. Look forward.
I'll be careful what you wish for, though. Google could kill off, you know, if they bought the phone, they could kill it off. That's my worry whenever Google makes something that I love. Like Google Photos as well. I really enjoyed their free photo uploads. I was using that a lot, as well as the full resolution ones, because I do pay for 1 terabyte. But yeah, that's going as well. And so anything you love that, you know, if Google sort of uses it and then just doesn't, you know, doesn't see it fitting their current strategy, I think it could be a bit worrying.
Google Photos is an interesting one, because if you haven't heard about that, it's, you know, basically Google originally said that high quality uploads for free forever, which has been brilliant and been going for years. And if you had a Pixel phone, you got free, like, full resolution uploads for life, which then went down to high quality. And as much as I don't want to defend big companies, it's like, this is a big deal for this is probably a huge amount of data they're storing for people, and they're giving you 15 gigs free to start with. And that's probably, I feel like this is basically caused by the fact they probably have just billions of terabytes of stuff. Like, this is costing us thousands of pounds a minute, and we offer it for free, and it's maybe just reached the end of its ability to work.
Yeah, a huge amount of that will probably be screenshots that you've accidentally captured.
Oh, God,
as well.
Yeah.
My Google Photos is filled with my home screen, because for some reason my phone, just every time I touch it, it takes a screenshot.
Or things that people have sent you on messenger services as well. I've got absolutely screw tons of that.
Yeah, I had to go into WhatsApp and make sure that those weren't saved, because some people send very weird things and you're like, I don't want that appearing in my...
Gerald Lynch, specifically, the editor of TechRadar, who's been on this podcast, will be the one. You see him send something, you're like, oh no, what's that going to be? My answer is, it started off as frippery, and I actually now think it makes sense. What if Apple bought Pokemon/Niantic?
Oh, no.
Just let that hang there.
Wow, yeah.
No.
There's a few things, like, you know, one of the, I know it's obviously, you know, the beauty of Pokemon Go specifically is how it's widespread across everything. But there's a few things in there. Number one, I think that the Apple Watch Pokemon Go integration was a really good thing, but it wasn't done very well at all. Let's make that better. Number two, I just would love to see what happened if Pokemon just went into Apple, and because it cost so much money, it became part of so much of their, you know, there's Pokemon just throughout the launches and littered through the videos, and it just became like this kind of really weird mascot for Apple in loads of different areas. Thirdly, there's already a Pokemon called Applin, which that's solving a lot of the problems. But four, and this is actually the serious point, is the reason that Niantic, I think, got so much investment was not just because of one key title, because it had so much good stuff in the AR space, you know, this capability of developing technology to work in augmented reality. To my eye, it doesn't seem amazing, but, you know, apparently there's some quite good, robust technology underpinning all of this. Let's get that in Apple, because someone's got to get augmented reality working soon so we can actually use it. I still love the idea. It's just that it's not happening. So if Apple buys Niantic, maybe that can happen. I mean, Facebook hasn't ruined Oculus, right? Right? Right?
All right. No, I don't agree with that, obviously.
I mean, like...
Well, I saw on TV the other day an iPhone 12 advert, and a big hook was augmented reality, where there was a giant Rita Ora sort of towering over London, and it was quite scary. Well, because it didn't look like Rita Ora, but so they're obviously, Apple are quite interested in augmented reality. Would I want to sacrifice being able to play Pokemon on either an Android device or even a Nintendo device? I mean, would you think that Apple owning Pokemon would mean that you'd never be able to play it on Nintendo?
It'll be fine. That won't happen.
No, it wouldn't.
I'm sure.
No, it wouldn't.
Apple
doesn't share like that, and like it because like a lot of people would be cut off at the neck if that were to happen.
Okay, fine. I won't make it happen then.
I think this might be the worst idea you've ever had.
That is actually true.
Even though it's not remotely likely to happen, I'm actually quite upset just by the idea of it. So,
okay, fine. I will not award myself the points. I'm going to give them two. Oh, it's difficult because both the points had really good and bad elements to them. But Matt, because I feel the passion for the smartwatch that I feel like you've owned a smartwatch since like 2013. You're refusing to let go of it.
No, I bought it earlier this year, and I loved it. I was a bit like you with the OLED saga. I kept on saying, I'm going to buy one, and then talking myself out of it. So I finally went for the Fossil Gen 5. It just looked like a really nice one. And I thought, oh, yeah, Android Wear. I've heard that a lot. It's Google.
It's not like you work really on Tech Radar or anything. You could find out about any of this.
Well, it was quite... I think they appeared quite highly in our best... wearables, but I thought that Android Wear would be a really good OS that would have good support for lots of apps and stuff, and then I found that's not quite the case. So for example, Spotify, you can't have you can't download playlists, but you can with Google Music, and I do really like it, but ironically it's some of the Google services which they're kind of taking away from Android Wear rather than adding to it, and that's a bit worrying. But I do love the watch. Really, really do like it.
I really wish I hadn't brought up the OLED TV, because I'm in such a quandary right now. The one I want is now at a price that I had in mind. It's still a lot of money, and I'm trying to save up to sort out a house move and stuff. And I really am scrimping the money together, and I can't justify it, but I want it so much.
Just buy it. I mean, like, this is what I did. No. This is what I did with the watch, though. I kept on putting off. It's like, oh, but, you know, Christmas is coming up. I can't buy it for myself. I've got so many other things I need to spend money on. And then, oh, my car's broken down, so it has to go on that. And then, oh, you know, the boiler goes. You'll just never buy it. So you either have to sort of... And I don't regret it. I really do like the watch, and I'm glad I bought it. But I could have easily have said, no, I'm not going to buy it, and, you know, carried on sort of making excuses. And I feel you'll do the same. Forever and ever and ever.
So only 7 years.
I mean, if you do buy it, just make sure you buy it from one of our sites.
Sheree, come on.
I have to put that plug out there.
Yeah. If you think I'm not going to go and find the best deal on Tech Radar, you'll be wrong, because you'll always find it there. It's because Henry keeps writing really good articles. Henry St. Ledger on Tech Radar just keeps writing good articles about how it's lower and you can get this half price offer. And I'm like, oh, it's such a good deal. But if you do want to see it,
wait till Black Friday comes.
No, because it's at Black Friday prices now. That's the problem. This is Currys in the UK has gone for its early Black Friday price drop on it. And I'm like, oh, it's here and it's not going to get any cheaper. And they'll price match. And it's like, oh, God, it's so hard. Anyway. I'm going past this. Matt, you can have the points. Let's talk computing.
Thank you.
Let's do it.
Right. First of all, Apple. They're the new Pokemon owners. No. Apple has launched a whole range of laptops that are actually, whisper it, very, very good, Matt.
Yes. Yeah, two laptops and a
Mac. I say a whole range being three, yeah. Admittedly. Sorry.
Well, two. And just
the Mac Mini as well. So we've got the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro, and the Mac Mini. That's three products. That's a range.
Yeah, but it's not a range of laptops. That's not a range of laptops.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Not laptops. Sorry. A range of products, including two laptops. There you go. Sorry.
There we go.
That's it. Yes, they did. Yeah. And I'm currently finishing up my full reviews of them, but I've had them for quite a while now. And I really like them. Basically, the big thing about these releases is that Apple has parted ways with Intel. Intel were the company that sort of usually makes processors and integrated graphics for MacBooks and the Mac Mini. And there have been rumors, and it's now been official, that Apple have actually worked on their own system on chip, it's called, so their own processor and graphics card combined, called the M1, which is based on ARM architecture. And so it's quite different to what Intel are doing, but what it's resulted in is some really nice bits of hardware, actually, which I'm really excited about. They are really good performers. The battery life is really good. Apple have promised 20 hours on the MacBook Pro 13-inch. In my test, it hasn't quite reached that. It's reached about 15 hours, which is really good in our benchmark tests. Basically, I took it out of the box. It was already had charge, and I used it for a couple of days, and I didn't need to plug it in. So it's really quite exciting stuff, actually. And this is their first computer chip. Obviously, Apple make their own chips for their iPads and iPhones. They've been doing that for years, haven't they?
But yeah.
So it kind of makes sense for them to do it for their Macs as well. But it's been really cool, actually. I'm really impressed with what they've done so far.
Yeah, Cherie, what's the situation over at Laptop Mag? Have you been farming them out? Have you been holding them yourself?
I did get one of them. I got the Pro. I gave it five...
As is fitting your reputation.
I mean, all the stuff, all of it. But I reviewed the Mac Pro, the MacBook Pro, and I gave it 5 stars, editor's choice.
Well, justify your decision now.
It was hard for me not to do it. That M1 chip, like that system on the chip, like Intel's in trouble. Intel's got some problems coming, and I don't know how they're going to solve it. They're still trying to get the 7-nanometer chip down. Apple's like 7, we're on 5 nanometers. Like, we're in the future. We're doing this. That chip has so much stuff on it for such a tiny, tiny component. Just to break it down, you've got the processor on there. It's an 8-core processor. 4 of those cores are broken up for high performance. 4 of them are for high efficiency. Then you've got
Big Little.
Huh?
Big Little.
Yeah.
Then you've got the GPU, another 8-core production. You've got unified memory on there, up to 16 gigs. You've got the secure enclave on there. So you've got a whole host of security features built into this tiny, tiny chip. You've got image signal processing, which makes the when you're doing FaceTime or you're doing Zoom or whatever, it makes you look even better on camera. And it's got like 16 billion transistors. Like, they've just crammed all this stuff into this tiny, tiny thing. And they came out with all these grandiose claims that when you heard them, you're like, come on, Apple. Come on. Come on. It's too much. You're better than 98% of the PCs currently on the market. You're 2.3 times faster on the processing power. You're 5 times faster on the GPU. It's living up to the hype. I literally had no choice but to give this laptop 5 stars. On our battery test, it lasted 16 hours and 32 minutes. When we put it up for performance, it beat out the Dell XPS 13, the Asus ZenBook 13, both of which have the new Intel 11th gen chips. Intel has a big, big problem on their hands. I don't know what they're going to do. And then add insult to injury, when you really think about it, like, so you've got AMD on one side coming for them. And then you've got NVIDIA on the other side, because quiet as it's kept, NVIDIA bought just bought ARM, and M1 is an ARM-based chip. So there's just so many invaders at the gate. I don't know what Intel is going to do, but they need to figure it out soon.
Yeah, it's really interesting times. I mean, Intel still has a huge, huge lead, and I don't see that shrinking too soon. But yeah, as Sherry says, it's just really getting attacked on all sides, really. And this Apple just coming out of the gate with such a successful chips already is just really, really impressive. What I really like about it is that they brought out Big Sur, macOS 14. macOS 11. And what's really cool about that is that they've got this tool called Rosetta 2, which basically translates code from older apps which were designed to be to run on Intel-based Macs. They can run pretty much flawlessly on the new M1-based MacBooks, and I've been testing it, and it's really, really cool. So basically, pretty much any app that you used to run on your older Intel-based Mac, you can run on the new MacBook or the Mac Mini with the M1. And this is really cool because Microsoft kind of have been trying something similar with Windows 10 on ARM devices, which are Windows 10 laptops, which have ARM-based processors as well. And they cannot run a huge amount of apps. It is actually quite shocking how poor the selection is. The fact that Apple have come out and said, any of your old Mac apps can run in this new one as if they were running natively is such a cool selling point. And not only that, they can now run iOS apps as well. So I'm more concerned about Microsoft at the moment, because I think Apple have completely humiliated them when it comes to building a laptop and building an operating system that runs on ARM, because Windows 10 on ARM cannot compete.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah, when you said that, I was like, oh yeah, that is a thing.
But that's what's so good about it, is actually you wouldn't even know, really. There's only one little pop-up at the beginning if you run an older app, which says you need to download Rosetta. And then
talking about Rosetta. I was talking about Microsoft and ARM. I forgot all about that. No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, Apple, once again, like, is really leaning into the it just works mantra, because it just works. It really does. Like you really can't tell outside of timing how fast something launches or how fast something reacts. You really, really can't tell. And while I'm only a Mac user in my work life, and typically I'm a Google Chrome type of girl, Safari is lightning fast on the new MacBooks. It's like I've done some runtime, some load times, and like it's almost blinking you miss it fast. This is going to usher in a new era of laptops, and it's going to be interesting to see what the competition is going to do to keep up, because now Apple is making its own chips across the board. What does that mean for Dell? What does that mean for Lenovo? What does it mean for HP? What are they going to do when it comes time to do our face-off articles or this or that, and this laptop keeps beating all the competition, and we haven't even gotten into the we haven't gotten to the 16-inch MacBook yet. That's still in the pipeline.
Yeah, and also that, you know, the MacBook Air begins at $999. It's actually cheaper than a lot of Windows based competitors these days. So Apple have come out with like something which is actually really good value, and you know, a while ago you wouldn't have probably thought that.
And the other thing that we have to talk about with these M1 laptops is how the Air is suddenly a contender. Before the Air still is the laptop of the every person. Like if you are a student or an educator or someone who just likes a Mac, and you don't want to spend the money and you don't need to do all this heavy processing or video editing, you went with the Air. That's still true, but with the M1 chip, the Air is almost as powerful as the MacBook Pro, like to the point where it can edit 4K video. The only difference between the two is that the Air doesn't have a fan. So after a while, if you keep doing taxing tasks, like that heat spreader that it has inside is eventually going to get too hot and the performance is going to take a hit. But in our testing, both systems are really maintained their cool. So this is unprecedented. We actually gave the MacBook Air a 4.5, and I think we dinged it because of the ports, and so, I can't remember the other reason it didn't get to that 5 mark, but it was close.
That's quite interesting, because I would have almost reversed those scores, because I think the MacBook Air is so good, they're kind of is a good argument against the MacBook Pro, because like as you say, it's actually got the same, if you get the higher version as well, you get the same 8-core CPU, 8-core GPU, M1 chip as the MacBook Pro 13-inch. Yeah, the throttling's a bit of a worry if you're going to do intensive tasks for a long, long time. But what's interesting is that the new MacBook Air, also the screen supports the P3 color gamma.
So does the Pro. The Pro's always
The Pro always did, and that was kind of like a selling point for the Pro. But the fact that the Air is cheaper and now supports that means that if you're a video editor and you're thinking, I really need color reproduction and accuracy, but I could save some money and go for the Air now, I think that's the really, you know, really strong thing. The only problem I found with both of them is that it's exactly the same designs and nooks.
Yes.
I really, really wish Apple had kind of made them slimmer, made them smaller, made them a little bit different, because they're so exciting and the potential is so exciting. But when you open up the box, you say, oh, it's the same as the one I had last time. So I would have loved Apple to have kind of been a bit more inventive with the design as well as the internals.
I think that's a difficult one though, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people, you know, the MacBook design is what absorbs in a lot of people. I mean, Apple does need to update designs generally, but then equally, I was saying that a lot about the iPhones. Then I got the new square-edged iPhone 12, and I'm like, nah, I don't like it. I don't like the new design. And then straight away, you're into a problem. I get that. I have a question around, first of all, Dad, text me now if you're still listening. I'd like to know if you've made it this far. He may be in Sainsbury's right now shopping. So if he is, I'm watching you. But with these MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air, the new ones, I mean, I'll be honest, the way you're talking about it is making me go, I think I want one of these, because that sounds really good, especially the battery life. And we know the longevity of a MacBook is strong. But it starts at, what is it, $999 and pounds for the Air, and that's only 256 gigabytes of storage, and you have to spend an extra $300 to get 512, and you've got, I think, $1,299 for the MacBook Pro, that's 256 gigabytes of storage, and you have to almost double that to get to the 1 terabyte version with obviously much higher specs as well. I mean, are these still feel like expensive laptops compared to the competition?
They are.
They are expensive, yeah.
Like there's no sugarcoating it. Like they are, I mean, they're premium systems, and you know, that's what you get, what you pay for with this. I actually did the version of the MacBook Pro I reviewed did have the 1 terabyte drive, and that put the price tag up to $1,899. So you're still going to pay a little arm, a leg, maybe a bibby. I don't know, but
relevant, relevant.
Like,
clever. I'm
here all night.
Right, we have spent a huge amount of time on these. This is probably the longest section ever on the Noise Cancelling Podcast, but really interesting. And I think a lot of people will get a lot from that. So we're going to have to whoop a little bit through next section, but it's more computing. It's AMD Radeon. Matt, give us the overarching thoughts on this.
Yeah, so today AMD released two GPUs, which then promptly sold out in a matter of minutes, which we were all worried that they would do. So the AMD Radeon RX 6800 XT and the AMD Radeon RX 6800. AMD have been having an absolutely killer year at the moment with its CPUs, and the fact that it's teamed up with both Microsoft and Sony for the PS5 and the Xbox Series X consoles. But with the when it comes to graphics cards, I think it's still trailing Nvidia. So we're kind of quite excited to see what these would be like and be like, yeah, come on, AMD, take, you know, you've kicked Intel's ass. Let's see you kick Nvidia's ass. Hasn't quite happened, unfortunately. I think Nvidia still has the performance, what's it called, edge to these. But they're two pretty strong offerings anyway from AMD. So they're the first cards that offer ray tracing from AMD. Nvidia cards have had them now for a couple of years. And ray tracing is sort of an advanced graphical effect which offers a more realistic lighting and reflections, basically in a nutshell. It just makes things more immersive. Sometimes it looks great. Sometimes it just tanks your FPS unless you've got a very, very powerful PC.
That's frames per second for everyone out there.
Sorry, yes, it is. Yeah. So
I was trying to get involved, but I wasn't commenting on your ability to talk about things. I just felt like I hadn't said anything for a while.
No, that's right. No, that's fine. But yeah, so yeah, the more frames per second you have, the faster and smoother a game feels. And what you want is ideally 60 frames per second, if not higher. And when you turn on ray tracing, that makes the graphics card work a lot harder. And then the frames per second it is able to show can drop, and that can make games feel a bit more juddery. And so these new cards, they're very good. They're very competitive with Nvidia, both on price and performance, yeah. But they haven't overtaken Nvidia.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, obviously, because we are running late, but it's really interesting to see, especially from my perspective, who hasn't had, you know, I haven't been into the GPU community anything like, obviously, what you have been, and I've been watching from afar and sort of seeing the level of interest and the fervour, and just people desperate to get their hands on this. You know, all the focus is on PlayStation and Xbox, but we're seeing just as much interest in trying to get hold of one of these graphics cards at the moment, and just shows that the gaming world is, especially in terms of hardware, is really alive and well right now, and there's just different options out there, which is brilliant.
It's an incredibly exciting time to be a gamer, no matter what platform you're on. I think the fact that the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 are now out, and a lot of developers are going to start aiming their games for that, for those platforms, really benefit PC gamers as well. Because for a long time, PC gamers have been able to have very strong, powerful graphics cards that outclass the consoles. But when developers do a multi-platform game which has to run on the Xbox One, which is like 7 or 8 years old now, it means that, you know, you're not quite taking advantage of these the hardware in the PCs. But now, you know, we're going to see some incredibly exciting games and some very beautiful games, some very complex games. The fact that both consoles now use SSDs is going to be really cool. So game worlds can load really quickly, assets can load really quickly. That's going to be a real game changer as well. And that's stuff that PC gamers will take advantage of as well.
Cool. Well, that is exciting. And I feel like it's good to see some sort of balance come through as well there. On the gaming side as well, I just wanted to highlight a piece. I don't know how I'm going to get this out to people, maybe put it on Twitter. But John Loeffler, our PC gaming writer. No, that's not true. US gaming writer, sorry. No, that's not even true either. John Loeffler, I'm very sorry. Matt, give him his official title. I keep calling him different things, so I keep thinking about gaming. He is the staff writer for computing in the US, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. I don't know why I can't get that right. I'm sorry, John. You're wonderful. And I love you. He's written a wonderful piece on how able gamers are helping millions of gamers with disabilities through the Xbox Adaptive Controller. I'm not going to go into it right now because I urge you to go and find it yourselves. If you just Google Able Gamers Tech Radar, you'll probably find it. But it's a really good in-depth piece talking to this charity and how they work with Microsoft to create this assistive controller. It's a really nice thing to read. And it one of the things in it that really got to me was someone was talking and saying, they were talking, one of the founders of it were talking about one of their friends who called him to find, or he called her, sorry, to find her distraught and in tears, it says, and MS had decided that her mousing hand wasn't going to work anymore. And so they weren't going to be able to play. And she loved video games so much, and that's how she stayed connected. And he said, I was literally watching in real time video games being taken away from my best friend. And that's what started this. And it's a really brilliant story. Mm. And I urge you to go and read it because it's a really nice piece.
I'm definitely going to read that. That's a deep. I'm definitely going to read that after this.
And it's really nice to see. It's nice to see how Microsoft interacted with it and worked to make this a first party controller. I mean, this is not a new story. You know, we've seen the Xbox Adaptive Controller, but hearing the history behind it and how it's helping people with accessibility issues is something that's really wonderful. So, I urge you to read that. On to tech again. I've got a couple of things we want to talk through quickly. very soon there's going to be a rival to Garmin, is there? It's the Wahoo Element rival. So if you are someone who's out there who's into fitness at all, you've probably heard of Wahoo, which is just this incredibly wide fitness ecosystem now. So it started off probably, I would say, in terms of being known for turbo trainers. So there's things you clip your bikes onto, or you have a separate thing that can do virtual bike riding, racing, so that in difficult times when you can't get outside or it's windy or whatever, you can train indoors. That's where it started. They got chest straps, and the ecosystem of tech they've got has been pretty wide. So there's a lot of people, especially cyclists, who are into Wahoo. They've now launched a watch that, looking at it, Mike saw, one of our regular freelancers, reviewed this, and he says it's as good as a Garmin in many ways. So it's going to be interesting to see how this happens. But I think, well, on the one hand, this is going to be a smartwatch that does everything. So, you know, it tracks all of your different sports. It's apparently got a mode. So if you're into triathlon, it'll go from one discipline to the next without you having to press a button. Like, that's that hard, but apparently it's going to help save people who forget to do that, the option, the problem of missing out on their different times. And like I said, it will just interact much better with the Wahoo ecosystem. So if you've got a bike computer, if you've got that turbo train, if you've got all these other things, it'll be that much more slick. Whether it works or not, I don't know, but I'm quite excited about it. And it's good to have rivals, especially if they've got something different to offer. Cool. I was going to see how that landed with the team. Everyone's nodding. And very quickly, before we bring Matt Hansen to his inaugural attempt at the news blast, the Samsung Galaxy 21 FE and the Galaxy Fold FE, Galaxy Z Flip 3. The story is the Samsung Galaxy S21 FE and the Galaxy Z Fold FE have appeared in the leaked Samsung 2021 lineup. What that really means is that, A, Samsung is not going away from foldables anytime soon, which I'm very excited about. Foldable phones are cool. But the FE is basically, you know, it's the fan edition. It's the cut down, a bit more powerful in certain ways version. It's a bit cheaper and gets fans of the company the stuff they want without having to pay so much money. And bringing that down to the Fold, that tells me that Samsung is still very much all in on foldable phones. Matt, would you buy one?
No, I haven't seen any foldable phone that I've particularly liked at the moment, but I don't really follow phones that much anymore.
Matt, you used to be my phones writer.
Sorry. I know. But the thing is, well, I don't have time now because it's all just
so many GPUs
cards,
yeah.
And yeah. But as someone who's not always in that world, when I hear about a foldable phone, you know, Samsung's issues a couple of years ago just flash up in my mind. So I've still, it might be unfair, but I still kind of think that it's something which I don't need personally. I think the phone I've got at the moment, which is a Samsung Note, is absolutely fine for what I don't think I'm not thinking, oh, I wish I could fold this or anything. So I like the fact that they're doing new things with the form factor. I always want to see in every sort of part of technology, try new things, and if it doesn't work, at least you tried something. But I've yet to see a foldable phone where I've been like, I need one of those. I really want one of those.
No one needs it, but it's cool. That's what I like about it. I mean, I'm assuming Cherie's going to have one soon if the Galaxy Note comes out foldy.
If the Note folds, then I'm gonna go with it because I'm a fan of the Note. But if I had to choose a foldable phone, I am actually going to go with the I'm going to go with Samsung, even though that Oppo phone looks real interesting, but it will never come to the United States. So, okay, sarah, sarah.
And which one's that one? The rollable phone.
Yes, that thing looks I just want to play with it. I just want to
So there was an innovation day for Oppo, just for people here, and it's the rollable phone. So what it is like it's a normal phone and you just stretch it out basically and a little more screen rolls out the sides. It's very much, you know, showing off new technology and it's a concept device, but that I do think that looks cooler than foldable phones maybe. I think it was interesting, and I think I might have spoken about this on the podcast before, and if I have, sorry, but you're hearing me again. So I went over to Holland and I talked to this company called Polymer Vision, who were making these foldable e-ink displays, and they had one that folded out. And I said, you know, why have you gone for the fold and not for the roll? They said, we have a rollable one. It's just that in our testing, nobody thought it wouldn't break. They just felt like it was too fragile. And so people worry about rollables compared to foldables. So I was like, that's interesting, but it'd be great if it comes out because it looks way better to be able to just extend a phone like that, like whoop. And that's what you really want to see. And we've seen LG do it with TVs as well. Let's have rollables. It'd be great. Anyway, let's talk more, or let's hear more from Matt Hansen. Matt Hansen, you ready for the news blast? Are you excited?
I'm excited and confused. So what, you just want me to talk very quickly about news stories, is it?
Don't pretend you haven't been practicing this day and night. So for the listeners who don't know, in which case what you're doing, please subscribe and give us 5 stars. That'd be really nice, especially on Apple Podcasts.
Yes, please.
Helps us get up the technology charts. We want to get more people listening. It'd be lovely. So, but if you haven't been listening and subscribing, shame on you. But the news blast is 60 seconds and we get a guest, or me and Cherie once in a while, to try and rattle through as many stories that have happened in this week in tech to give you, the listener, as much information as you can handle. So obviously the news story can't just be the headline. It has to be a little bit of information as well that tells you the real nuggets of the story that you need to know. It can be very quick, and the record is 13 from Gerald, although it's hotly disputed, as we all know. The low record is 4. So there's your window to work in, Matt. If you don't want to be bottom of the fastest lap,
I'll aim for 5. I'll aim for 5.
That's the handsome way. There you go. So yeah. The key rules are you have to explain it a little bit. You can't just give the headline. And hopefully, but it sounds like you haven't got a script, so that's fine. You can't read from a script to have done it. We've had some people try and do that. Doesn't fly with me.
Nope.
But anyway, 60 seconds. Let's see how many you get through. On your marks, get set, go.
Sony has defended the price of PS5 games. It's saying that actually $70 is good for stuff like Demon's Souls. I kind of agree with that. A lot of work goes into those. Sony has also said that 8K content will be coming to the PS5 in a future update. I'm not too sure about that, to be honest, because I tried Assassin's Creed Valhalla at 8K with the RTX 3090. Didn't work very well at all, so I don't see how a much cheaper console will be able to do that. Sticking with PS5, a new 866 MB system update has come. Apparently, all improved performance. That's very quick because it's not even out in the UK, but it's out in America only for a couple of days. But apparently, it's going to get better. iPhone 12 mini has got a big problem. Apparently, people are having trouble unlocking their phones. That's a big issue. So come on, Apple, sort it out. The Galaxy Z Fold 3, who cares about that, because Oppo X 2021 is a 7.4 inch. Oh,
I don't
know. You'll never
know. You're a 4.5 there.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean,
really?
Cherie, you have to adjudicate. Did he explain the Oppo story well enough? I felt like it was a leading to the truth.
It was like, I would say 4.5. Like, you're like, you've fallen into the trap that I fell into. Like, you want to give a really good explanation, and when Gareth does, it's like, like, it's a typewriter.
I mean, I did really enjoy your talk about the 8K. I really felt like you gave the whole of that story in a really succinct 12-second burst.
Did you count that as one story or two?
One story.
I counted it as two because
the
other story was, because the other was Assassin's Creed at 8K.
Okay, all right, fine. You've done it there. 5.5. Well done, Matt.
I think I thought too hard about this and I kind of made things roll into one, and now I'm worried that you've counted multiple stories.
Okay, well, I got you here. Sony has defended the price of the PS5 games. PS5 output in 8K content and future update. That's just one, but you said there's two there. Cool. Then the PS5 upgrade system update. Yep.
Yeah,
and then you got then you jumped onto Galaxy Fold 2. Or the forgetting that, and Oppo's gone for a wild roldable phone, which we just talked about,
and iPhone Mini.
Oh, the iPhone Mini. Okay, so actually you did do
and I said about PlayStation 5 having 8K update, but it's not going to play up 8K, I think, because, and then the second story was
5.5. Matt, you got 5.5. You've basically fallen into the annals of no one will remember that you did really badly. So that's what you're aiming for, and you absolutely achieved it.
That's all I wanted. Mediocrity. That's all I wanted.
Yeah, and I'm proud of you for that. Right, this is going to be interesting. Cherie, sing us in too.
Unpopular opinions, let your hate unfurl. Laptops, phones, and consoles, what are we going to hate? Unpopular opinions.
And unfortunately, Bill was going to be giving us a wonderfully spicy take on how the Xbox Series X is just a Windows 10 PC in S mode, which, as part of the whole computing chat, that would have fitted in really nicely. But obviously, Bill is not here. So we're going to have to rethink this one on the fly. Cherie, are you hating on anything right now?
Well, I'm expecting a spicy take from Rami Tabari, my staff writer, for this weekend, that he should have waited to get the Xbox Series X. And I actually agree with that take.
Well, that's not...
I'm sure I've waited till next year or something.
Yeah, like, what? Like, it's, it, like, I was going to get, like, I totally buy into the launch day hype. I want my consoles launch day. I want them before, like, if I could get them even sooner, all the better. But I think for the regular the average gamer, you don't need the Xbox Series X right out the box. Like, you can wait until next year, because the reason is really simple. There are the lack of first party games, which is something that I talk about ad nauseum in my review. Check it out on Laptop Mag, cheap pop. At this point, you can play Assassin's Creed Valhalla. You can play all the third party games, like Madden. Any third-party game that is on the Xbox is going to be on a PlayStation, but the PlayStation has, they have first-party exclusives. They have Bugsnax. They have Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, like, and a few other games that...
Sackboy sounds really good, and so does Astro's Playroom.
Apparently Astro's Playground sounds amazing. Yeah.
Like,
and it's free.
And like, it's free. It is the it's the first game that you actually should play on your PlayStation, so you can really get a feel for exactly how cool the DualSense controller is.
Is this the first games console that's launched without a single exclusive game? Because it seems a very odd choice by Microsoft, and I know the fact that it's not launching with Halo maybe screwed up their plans a bit, and it's not terribly fair to cascade them for that. But it's still, I think that was going to be cross-gen anyway. So it just, I don't get the appeal of the Xbox Series X at the moment. I think, as Bill was going to say, was that it is, one, it's a gaming PC that's actually more limited, hence the S mode, because any game that I can play on an Xbox Series X, I'll be able to play on my PC, and I'll be able to play it better. It's just the fact that there doesn't seem to be this kind of... I like new games consoles to be a bit weird and have some new, try some strange things, and Sony do that quite well with their PlayStations. Whereas the Xbox Series X just seems like a bit of a boring step up.
Yeah, it's not even, it's just that it needed that first party exclusive. It needed it so bad. And then everything went down with Halo. And at this point, I'm like, you know what? I could have went, like, you should have just held on to Gears 5 and just made that a launch title. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, oh, well, now you can play with Dave Bautista. Oh, now you can play with the New Day from WWE. Those are nice, but like, or they could have gone into that deep, deep well of indie titles that they have and tried to get another Cuphead going. Something. Like, they needed something that, because like, and you laugh, but PlayStation literally has a game where you're chasing around living food, and if you eat said food, a part of your body turns into the food, and people are loving it. I'm loving Bugsnax. The thing, like, I don't know where the game is taking me, but I'm with it. I'm with this story. I'm trying to find Lisbeth. All of that. I don't know why, but Xbox has this deep well of indie games that. Because I was really hoping that Tunic was going to come out, which was this, it's kind of like Legend of Zelda, but with a little cute fox. I've been wanting that game for about 2 or 3 years now. And they have, like, this is going to be the crux of Microsoft's battle for this console war, this take on it. You have to get the games to market. It will not matter that you bought Bethesda. It will not matter that you have Ninja Theory and all these other great development houses if you don't get games to market. It's like the sound of one hand clapping. Let me see if I can get to the mic. Can you hear this?
Yeah, sounds like that.
Yes, no.
Yeah, like
yeah, they just don't show any kind of, like, I want a bit of imagination from their games as well. Let's not have a Gears 6 and a Halo whatever, and and just kind of like be a bit more inventive and get the games out, yeah, and just, you know, show a bit of passion rather than just like, oh, it's got better specs.
Yeah, because I mean, you get games like Ori and the Will of the Wisp, but like if you haven't played Ori and the Will of the Wisp, please do. It's a beautiful. It is one of the prettiest Metroidvanias out there. Like between that and Bloodstained, like beautiful games, but like games like Ori don't get that big push because they're like because Microsoft is just horrible at marketing, honestly. And then when you do get the game to get pushed, it gets delayed because Ori got delayed a couple of times on this release schedule. They have to nail down these release schedules. Like,
yeah, it sounds like a management problem in a way. Just the fact that so many do slip.
They've got to figure it out because this is a continuing problem with Microsoft. Like, there's no reason that we should not be playing Halo Infinite right now. I don't know what's going on over there. Like, people are leaving. Like, the head of the whole thing's like, all right, I'm out. Like, what are y'all doing over there? You have to get your ducks in a row. You cannot spend all this money on buying these folks and just drop the ball like this.
Well, I think we really managed to get something out of nothing there. Well done, Cherie. I feel like we really tapped a well.
That's what I'm here for. Call me the Clutch Queen.
Well, thank you very much, Matt. It's lovely to have you on the podcast. I know you're on one of the lost podcasts of the pilot series that we recorded but never turned up. There are a few of those, and I think they'll never come to pass because I've got no idea where they are, and probably they weren't that good as these polished machines that they are right now. So thank you very much for being on here. Have you had a good time?
Yes, I've had a lovely time. Thank you very much. And thank you for being so accommodating to me, both of you.
Well, by just talking to you. We're very kind like that. If people want to find out more about Matt Hansen and The Legend of, how can they do that? Social media's on Tech Radar. How could you do that?
Yeah, go on Tech Radar and follow me on Twitter at Matt Hansen 45. Apologies if you think I don't tweet enough.
It's not you don't tweet enough. It's the fact you couldn't get your Twitter handle right 44 times in a row. You kept messing up the sign-up process. And you're like, can't have that.
Don't get me started about why I have a 45. I was given one of the first at live addresses from Microsoft when I was on Windows Vista magazine, and I still chose Matt Hansen 45.
Wow.
I always choose. Yeah. Good. It's a really silly, annoying, and boring story, which I win.
Well, I think we've got half of it already. Cherie, you can't see this behind the scenes, but Cherie's been fighting the sunshine today. It's been like a little blast that's coming over her face, and she's been slowly moving away from the camera just to try and get away from it. It's like a blinding light, but it seems to have gone away now. Finally, now we're leaving. How can people get hold of Miss Smith 11?
Right there. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Smith 11. That is M-I-S-S Smith 11. And you know, we're gearing up for Black Friday, so definitely go to laptopmag.com for all of those Black Friday Cyber Monday deals. And as always, laptop in the past, laptop now, laptop forever.
Tech Radar. And I've been Gareth Beavis. You can find me at Super Beav on Twitter. Tech Radar is just simply the best. There's no question. I mean, by all common, well-known metrics, everyone says it. I won't bore you on what those are right now. It's just, it's complex, but just trust me. Everyone thinks Tech Radar is amazing. But thank you very much for listening to this podcast episode, which I have no idea what it is. 30 something. 38, no, why not? Please, again, as I mentioned, please do subscribe. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, just right now, just go and give us 5 stars if you think it's worth it. You know what? I've been saying that and trying to be nice, but actually, even if you don't think it's worth it, give us 5 stars and just say something else. Like, write how terrible it is underneath. But the 5 stars is the key part, because then we can get right up them charts, and that would be lovely. So thank you again, Matt, for being here. Thank you, as ever, Cherie, for being part of this podcast. And I'm Gareth Beavis, and I will speak to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.